Well, hey there, Sean.
Hey there, John.
So, we were planning not to do a podcast this week because our intrepid Capitol reporter, Laurel White, is off today, and we thought we could use a break. But then, so you sent me this picture this morning, this selfie that we took a year ago, right before we recorded our last in-person episode of the podcast, not knowing that was going to be the last one.
Yeah, and that got us thinking, what did we talk about in that podcast? So we went back and we listened to the whole thing.
Yeah, and it turns out that there were a few things that we kind of got right. And there was just so much that we had no idea was coming our direction over the next year.
So we decided, hey, let's podcast about that.
Yeah, and since Laurel is not here this week, you know what that means.
Oh, John, I believe it means we play a track from Weezer's Blue album.
Yep, that is exactly what it means. So let's do it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
This week, what a year it has been. And that, of course, is The World Has Turned and Left Me Here, the third track from Weezer's 1994 self-titled debut album known to fans as the Blue Album. And what a perfect song that is, because literally, the world has turned one time, or I guess revolved around the sun one time.
Exactly.
since that episode.
How do we still have this song available to us? You know, we try not to replay the same Weezer Blue Album songs, and to the best of our knowledge, this one was not taken, and it seems to fit this moment just ideally. So if we forgot one, you can let us know. But
yeah, any podcast super fans out there, if we're mistaken and we have played that Weezer song before, you know, give us a holler, but it's not in my notes. So
for those of you who are new to this rule, it's just very important. When Laurel's gone, we play the Blue Album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just what happens. It's out of our hands. We have no choice in the matter. Anyway, so tell me about this picture that you sent me this morning, John.
Well, it's a very...
Just to start things off.
It's a very cool picture, John. It's...
Oh, yeah.
It's you and me. We were either going to or from our recording session with Laurel, and we are on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where they have these delivery drones that drive, you know, they're just these little carts that take, I guess, college kids and staff meals, and we're sort of fascinated with them at this moment in history. And we decided we sort of photobombed this delivery drone, and
because we're just cool like
we're
that.
Just like it's just we're just really cool people, and what kind of cool people wouldn't do that? So we did that, and I just assume since we've you know, been working remotely, those drones have probably taken over campus. But
mm-hmm. They're the only thing left.
One of these days, I don't want to say pretty soon, who knows, but one of these days we'll get back there and we'll have to fend off the machines, I imagine.
Yeah. And they will have listened to this podcast and they will be angry at us for besmirching their reputation and belittling them.
Whatever.
So watch your back, man.
I'm ready.
So we were on our way up to the Capitol Bureau studio that day to record with Laurel, which in hindsight is kind of ridiculous because it's a room that's so small it's not even really set up for one person, and we were recording with three of us in there, not wearing masks because that was the advice at the time.
Yeah, it was don't do it.
Yeah, save the masks for healthcare workers.
Yeah, yep.
But do wash your hands or use hand sanitizer, and don't touch your face was the big thing.
We did that. We washed our hands. We didn't touch our face, but we did crowd three adult humans into this very tiny little closet and sat there talking to each other for quite a while. So,
like, literally facing each other
pretty
face
much
to face.
Yeah.
Talking about COVID.
Oh.
And
we knew what we knew,
politics.
Man. We knew what we knew.
Yeah. And listening back to this episode, we were almost apologetic in the intro because it was basically the first episode that we did that we were devoting to COVID, which at the time we called the new coronavirus to differentiate it from old coronaviruses. Calling it COVID wasn't even really shorthand at that point. But we were almost apologetic in the intro, saying, like, we know you come to us for politics news, and you've been probably hearing a lot of coronavirus news out there, and maybe you need a break, but, you know, there's a lot of politics stuff surrounding the coronavirus right now, so we kind of got to talk about it.
We felt the need to justify it. Like, look, yeah. I mean, you might not realize it, but state government is doing things related to the coronavirus. Which obviously is such an understatement now. I feel like we've done week after week. There's some thread of COVID news in what we report, even if it's not the topic, you know? But at the time, we didn't want to overwhelm our dear listeners by talking about COVID. So, we had no idea.
Yeah. So the main news event at the time around when we were recording that week was that Governor Tony Evers had announced his first emergency declaration surrounding COVID at that time. I think he announced it on Thursday and we recorded on Friday, and that was the big news.
And I was listening back to what we said about this, John, and one of the things we said, it feels like the language is pretty broad. It was one observation that we had. It gives the Department of Health Services broad authority. Those would go on to be fairly large, issues over the next few months. And then at some point when we were recording that day, we had to go back and re-record a little update from later because the governor had used his authority to order all public schools closed from March 19th until April 6th. Could be longer, but we said until April 6th. I'm talking to you from my house where my two daughters have been going to school virtually for the past year. One of them goes back to in-person instruction next week, but that is a little bit longer than April 6th by my math.
It is. And I mean, looking back on it now, I'm not sure we knew what a political, I mean, we didn't know what a political hot button issue so many things would become related to COVID, but schools has become one of the really big controversial points. You know, at the time it seemed like it didn't seem like that controversial of a thing. So at least in my memory, it was like governor closing schools right now, 'cause this thing could get bad for the next few weeks. We'll reevaluate in April. But little did we know what a huge, difficult, thorny issue it would be to keep kids not in the classroom for months and months and months and months.
Yeah, and actually, right now in particular, it seems especially thorny because this has become a very political issue at the state capitol, not just Wisconsin state capitol. I mean, it's echoing a debate you hear nationally. But in Wisconsin, you have Republicans who run the legislature saying they want to kind of a combination of either punish schools that haven't gone back to in-person instruction or reward schools that have financially. Mm-hmm. You also have the governor saying, I mean, he's coming out in support of in-person instruction. He's not mandating it. He's not like berating teachers about it. But he has come out and said that he supports it. So he's taking a he and Joe Biden are kind of, President Biden are kind of on the same page on that one, citing the CDC. So that is something that a year ago, I don't think we expected we, I'll speak for myself. I did not expect that I would be in March of 2021, not only kind of in this situation still, but also that this would become as political as it has. You know, one thing we did talk about in that podcast that I feel like it hasn't come to fruition, or it didn't mm-hmm. actually become the issue that we thought it might. We talked about quarantine guards in that issue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Laurel had done this big story, like looking into Wisconsin's existing quarantine rules having to do with, you know, transmissible diseases and such.
Yeah. And at the time we learned there were laws on the books that would give the DHS the power to enforce large fines for violating quarantines. And they could hire these private quarantine guards. And just like broadly speaking, during the pandemic, enforcement of any of these emergency orders, whether at the state or local level, has not been a heavy hand from the state. And now, based on a Supreme Court order that would be handed down a few months after we recorded that podcast, there's really limits on what the state can do in terms of penalties for violating health orders. That became like a big issue, but there were not like quarantine officers marching down the streets telling people to stay in their homes.
I guess at the time we had been following what was going on with the first outbreak in China, where, you know, whole cities essentially were quarantined, and there were outbreaks in Europe too, in certain countries where there were some pretty intense lockdowns. And so at the time it didn't seem, you know, out of the realm of possibility that certain communities in Wisconsin could be cordoned off, and that would need to be enforced in some way. But that just never was a thing, really.
No, it wasn't. I mean, even if the orders, the public health orders were broad, the enforcement was not. Here's something else we talked about that day, John. When we recorded in the Capitol, as of that moment, the state Capitol was open to the public. And we said that the Senate was scheduled to be in later in March, but that mm-hmm. was, we stressed that it was scheduled and not going to happen. And that meeting, that particular meeting, did not happen. And we wondered aloud, if the Senate comes in, what's Capitol going to look like? What would a Senate session look like?
And we specifically called out, under Senate rules, you can't meet virtually, right?
I think we might have done that. We were definitely wrong about that, because the Senate did meet virtually after that. I mean, they set their rules and they permitted that. They no longer permit that. You now have senators in the room when they're meeting, but they did for their first session. After COVID hit, to pass the COVID bill, they had a session where most senators met remotely via Zoom, some Zoom equivalent. They may use, what's the other one? The old one.
WebEx or Skype?
Skype.
Or...
Yeah, I think they might use Skype at the Capitol, but they did that in their first session. But then, as this thing has gone on, this year, at the beginning of the year, you had Republicans meeting in person in the Senate chamber and a lot of Democrats meeting in their offices. And then Republicans said, no, you got to meet in the chamber. So just the act of like how the Senate meets has also become political. I'm noticing a theme about this, John.
Yeah. I mean, I was gonna jump in and say that, like, no matter what we touch on, it seems like the general trend is, back in those early days of the pandemic, everybody seemed to sort of be generally on the same page. Like, this is dangerous. We're going to do what we need to do to figure this out. And over the last year, it has become a huge source of disagreement on so many levels, whether it's wearing masks or meeting in the Senate chamber or opening schools or what powers the governor has to declare emergency orders and enforce, you know, restrictions. It has really, really shifted.
Yeah, and I'll even say that the act of us, we're public employees, working remotely, there are some lawmakers who feel like all public workers should be back in offices, that, you've had people in other sectors who've been back working in person for a long time, and therefore the public sector should be too. I can just tell you, John and I are not taking a political stand here. This is just how we work now. And when that changes, mm-hmm. we'll work differently. We look forward to the day when we can safely photobomb robots again. This is the life that we want to get back.
I don't know, man. That's going to be dangerous by the time we get back. Those robots are going to be roaming around in packs, swinging pipes and billy clubs and such.
I have seen those videos. You've seen those videos where they get robots, like they program them to dance and do gymnastics and stuff? That freaks me out. What are we doing?
Oh, yeah.
Guys, have you not seen all the myriad science fiction movies that warn against this stuff?
Plus, like, as a former child gymnast, I imagine you feel a pang of jealousy to see a robot doing what you worked so hard to be able to do.
I literally was a child gymnast. It's true. And my name is Sean Johnson. But me and the actually famous Olympic gymnast, we are not related. Anyway, thanks for bringing that up, John. Here's something else that I wanted to talk about that I noticed in that podcast. We did talk about actual current political stuff. We were wondering aloud, boy, what's the April election going to look like? You know, there's some outstanding questions here. Is Bernie versus Biden, is that still going to be competitive? If it's not, if Biden's kind of the presumptive nominee by then, will it affect turnout for Jill Karofsky in her race against Dan Kelly for Supreme Court? Well, we can actually talk about that now. We know the answers to that. Turnout was still pretty high for Democrats in that race, even though it was basically Biden's race at that point. More people turned out to vote in the presidential race than did in the Supreme Court race. And Jill Karofsky benefited from that, and she won fairly handily against Dan Kelly. And she has a 10-year term on the state Supreme Court now, and Justice Kelly is off the court. So there's something that actually changed.
Yeah. I mean, and we were sort of wondering during that podcast what an election during a pandemic was going to look like. And we kind of had a sense like, oh, is there going to be more access to mail-in ballots? What's it going to be like with poll workers, a lot of whom tend to be older adults? It was something that Laurel brought up. What has sort of surprised you most about the way elections turned out in this pandemic year? I mean, we went through two big ones, that April one we were talking about, and then the big one, the presidential one.
I think about that April election a lot because at the time there was a lot we didn't know about COVID still, and that lack of knowledge made it more frightening. Are you there? Yeah, I mean, that's where I was anyway.
Well, I feel like you at the time had been freaking out. not to derail our conversation, but like that was one of the first things that we talked about in the beginning of that episode.
That's right.
Was that like Sean had been sort of going down the rabbit hole of COVID news at that point, and Laurel and I had kind of just been, you know, looking at the news, but whatever. Like this is something going on in China, Europe, not a big deal.
No,
but then there was like a
podcast from The Daily in late February that sent me into I went out and stocked up on like dried goods that night, and I still have a bit of rice left over in the stash. Anyway.
Right. But then, like, so we said, like, all right, this week sort of is the time where we really feel like we've joined you, Sean, in our heightened level of anxiety and worry about how scary this could be. Laurel said she went out and got dog food. The fact that Tom Hanks was diagnosed with COVID-19.
That finally got Laurel to go out and get dog food was when Hanks got diagnosed. Her dogs were so hungry before then.
Yep. No, but I, in general, yes, like we didn't know stuff and it was scary. So back to your point about elections.
So back to the point about the elections. Yeah. In that lead up to the April election, I don't really even want to rehash all this, but like, here, this is sort of the topic of our podcast. There's a reason we haven't done a lot of About That Thing We Said episodes over the past years, because like stuff changes so much. That it just,
everything it feels we say is wrong and out of date. Basically. We can't do a funny episode about that.
No, guess what? We're wrong again. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. no, but I mean, with the April election, you had, just to go back over it, you had the governor kind of in the run up to that election saying, we need to vote in person. We need to have this happen. Then with a week or so, I don't remember the exact time we did stories on it. He changed his tune and was saying we need to delay this election so we can send people absentee ballots. Republicans said, no, we're not going to do that. The election went forward. Some places were badly understaffed. There were huge lines in Milwaukee, Green Bay. Again, this is political, John. To this day, you have Democrats and Republicans blaming each other for what happened in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Republicans saying, why'd you only have, you know, 5 polling places in Milwaukee and 2 in Green Bay. Democrats saying, well, yeah, we didn't have staff because people were freaked out by COVID. And so we didn't have our usual poll workers. One thing we noted in this podcast is that many of those poll workers were elderly. And so we didn't know what that was going to mean. Well, it turns out it means that a lot of them did not volunteer to help out with that election. We did talk to some who did, but anyway, the election happened. And I would say the parties still fight about whether it should have or how it should have. And it set the stage for fights that the parties had over the next year over how elections should proceed in the age of COVID. You know, ours was kind of the first. And the general theme was that Democrats favored more absentee voting. And, you know, some Republicans did too, but just absentee voting has become political since the election, partly because President Trump and his allies filed a lot of lawsuits specifically aimed at overturning absentee ballots.
Right. And that's sort of a departure, because like a whole big chunk of that is the all of the unfounded claims from President Trump about election fraud and him continuing to claim that the election was stolen from him. But a lot of the issues that he and his allies and lawyers zeroed in on the election challenges were about things that were put in place because it was a COVID election. You know, so much more absentee voting and drop boxes and indefinitely confined voters. And we've talked a lot about this stuff in past episodes, but my point is there's overlap between the election fraud claims from President Trump and what elections look like during a pandemic.
Yes. Exactly.
So we could pretty much keep talking about this election stuff forever, but maybe changing gears here a little bit before we finish up this COVID year retrospective. One thing I feel like maybe we should talk about is something that we teased a little bit earlier about the struggles between the Evers administration and Republicans in the legislature about all of his powers And I feel like we should probably touch on that before we wrap up. We're looking at this spreadsheet here that we keep from our podcast episodes, and there's a bunch of stuff that's just like, SCOA's challenge to safer at home, safer at home, safer at home. Oh, mask mandates. Yeah, there's sort of a lot that spun out from that.
Yeah, just looking at it from our podcast timeline here, we have this podcast about the virtual legislative session where they pass almost unanimously Wisconsin's COVID legislation. And then the week after that, we're talking about this challenge to safer at home. And then we do four podcasts in a row on the challenge to safer at home. That became a very big part of our lives there, wondering what the Supreme Court was going to do with safer at home. And then...
And just in case folks don't remember, because it was back in, gosh, April of last year, what was safer at home?
Yeah, so safer at home was the order from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services that, closed a number of businesses throughout Wisconsin. You know, I think bars and restaurants, closing them to in-person dining was pretty significant. A variety of other businesses too, you know, schools were closed. That was safer at home. And so this was challenged by Republicans, and there was just, we were left wondering for weeks what was going to happen. It felt like that was forever, but when you really think about it, here we are, it's March of 2021, definitely still in a pandemic, but it was May of 2020 when the Supreme Court eventually struck down safer at home. And that was one of, in terms of like the biggest COVID-related moments that have happened over the past year, I would say that was one of the biggies. And people started going to bars that night too.
Oh yeah, gosh, I remember that. There were videos online of people packing into bars now that they were reopened during that window.
Right away, yeah. And so that was pretty significant. I think another significant COVID-related event kind of that sprung from what we were talking about in the room that day is that the governor issued another emergency order in July and issued Wisconsin's first mask mandate. And, you know, Republicans said right away, you can't do this. You already issued an emergency. You can't do this. And we have been under a mask mandate ever since. I mean, the governor has issued repeated emergency orders that set up this ongoing mask mandate. And I know we shouldn't talk about this stuff on a Friday because a court could issue a decision, I suppose. But we even thought, we thought recently that the Supreme Court might rule on the mask mandate because there were arguments quite a while ago in November, right? In November of last year, there were arguments against this mask mandate. And our Supreme Court, which is now a 4-3 conservative majority, not 5-2 that it was when it struck down safer at home, our court just has not ruled on it. So that has been an interesting turn of events, too, is just the difference in the court now that you've got that 4-3 split and the, you know, the world kind of revolves around what Justice Brian Hagedorn says about any, you know, controversial topic of the day.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe they'll issue a ruling after we're all vaccinated and people don't have to wear masks anymore. And we'll be like, oh yeah, that whole thing. And then we will have an answer about whether or not a governor during the next pandemic can issue multiple states of emergency for the same pandemic and do things like issue mask mandates or whatever mandates apply to that specific pandemic that we're suffering from. Anyway, there's one piece of tape that I sort of want to play to close on from that podcast episode a year ago, where you talked about sort of the historical perspective of things and how we're living through history. And I want to play it and see if you feel like what you said back then stands up.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have we have already turned that corner on this is it's history. I guess our best case scenario is that it is written about in terms of a pandemic that people took major reactions to. You know, the NBA season was postponed, the NCAA tournament canceled, people were sent home from work, events were canceled everywhere. But that it wasn't as bad as we all thought it would be. Mm-hmm. That's like the best case scenario, is that it works and everybody's complaining about overreaction, right?
Yeah.
And then the worst case scenario is that we didn't react soon enough. But either way, it's what we're going through right now. It feels like a lot because it is.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, past me is occasionally just profound. I just need a moment to soak that one in. Good job. Good job, past me. Please don't play all the ones where I would regret what I said. Yeah, well, I mean, I spoke in pretty, that was pretty broad, right? But yeah. So where did we end up on that? Did we didn't do enough? I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of people dead in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said we might see that we didn't act soon enough.
Yeah.
I think is what you said. And I guess I'm not sure so much it was acting soon enough as continuing to act the right way, which I think is what
It was hard to know. I mean, I think I hadn't thought about how long this could last. I remember thinking like, oh yeah, we're going to go home for a couple weeks. So dumb there. I actually had that thought for a while. Like, yeah, we'll just go home and isolate for a couple weeks and that'll take care of COVID and we'll be fine. I actually had that thought and I'm embarrassed of it, but, I sort of thought of it that way. And I don't think people as a whole were prepared for the level of societal sacrifice it would take to just not spread the disease as quickly as it did spread. I mean, there were times when Wisconsin was in very rough shape last November, December, particularly when our hospitals were so crowded that they're treating people in a parking garage. That's rough. Like you think back about that and to get there, it took, I mean, I know it's a disease and it's going to spread, but like getting there to that severity shows you that there was a time when we, you know, kind of collectively as a society, we're not taking it seriously enough. We can say that confidently, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it very clearly we can say it wasn't the scenario you were describing where we overreacted and we'll look at it as, you know, just something we remember. Like, no, this is going to be a society-shaping event for years and decades to come.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we ended on that happy-go-lucky note here.
Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to recording a podcast with you and Laurel again in an absurdly small room where we're sharing the same oxygen.
Yeah. Isn't that what we're all waiting for? To be sharing each other's air. One of these days we'll get there. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If this past year has taught us anything at all, it is that we have no idea what is going to happen next. But with any luck, we will still be here this time next year, still turning out the hits. And if you'd like to hear them, well, you can subscribe to get new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast delivered to you almost every single week when you subscribe to the show. It's available on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes, like 4+ years of them, anytime at wpr.org/politicspodcast.